Welcome to No Filter Femme. I'm Kelly Mason, and this is the podcast where we break down real, live, raw topics and conversations that affect and impact women, particularly Black women, over the age of 40.
And I'm your co-host, Malia Arnett Archie, and together we are redefining boundaries. We're redefining the definition of what's taboo, and we're talking about it. Talking about these things with absolutely no filter.
No filter?
So stay with us to enjoy our stories, our insights, and our experiences and yours so that we can celebrate and share together.
Absolutely.
So whether it's career transitions, y'all getting all these bloopers? Whether it's career transitions, health, wellness, relationships, it's everything that's really going on in our everyday lives that we don't typically have the time to stop and talk about or address. We're doing it here on No Filter Femme.
I love that. So grab your favorite beverage, get comfy, and join us as we embark on this unapologetically bold and empowering journey. This is No Filter Femme.
So welcome to our first episode. We are so super excited to be here. Yeah. And this first topic is, I think, what we consider a gateway topic, right? It is really opening up the dialogue around what it means to be defining, redefining, and setting boundaries at 40 and over.
So what's interesting about setting boundaries at 40 is I feel like I didn't set boundaries at 20. Mm-hmm. I didn't set boundaries at 30.
Yes.
And I do feel like as members of Gen X that we have taken and placed in the forefront, number one, that boundary, what boundaries are, how important they are, and giving ourselves freedom to redefine them along the way. I do feel like there's an evolutionary process that something about that 40 kicks off.
Yeah.
And there is, hence the name, No Filter Femme. There's a filter that we had before that has either shifted, changed, or been obliterated. And the boundaries that we had before, if we had any, we've come to a space where we realize these just aren't working for me.
They're not working for me. Because a lot of it is, I think, that we oftentimes in our 20s and 30s, we allow external factors and people in our lives, whether it be family, career, you know, maybe children, even a marriage, to define what our world looks like and feels like.
Yeah.
And at 40, I think you start to take stock of, you know, like, listen, I plan on living a lot longer, but even with my plan, I'm feeling a little bit more mortal at 40 than I ever have before.
Agreed.
And I am acknowledging that every day, every month, every year is important for me.
Yeah.
And so in order to live out the rest of my life in a way that is true to why I think I'm here and what's important to me, what makes me happy, I've got to set some boundaries.
Absolutely. You know, I remember growing up, if I remember correctly, whenever you turned 40, I don't think it was 50, but I feel like it was 40 was like the over the hill. And that's when...
At 40?
Yes! That's like when you would see like the over the hill balloons and the black balloons. And I remember having this almost like mortuary-like or this mortal thought associated with 40. And what I found, and what I have found with other women in particular, Black women definitely, is 40 really is almost like a reset.
It is. I love that.
You know what I mean? It's like a refresh, a reset. And what you were just mentioning, it comes across all spectrums of our life. Yeah. So it's almost like you kind of start in one area. Like I know for me, it started in my personal life.
Yeah.
And then it extended to my work career life and extended to my brand life. And then there's the fallout.
Yeah, all the people who have to be reintroduced to you.
Yes.
It's difficult sometimes.
It is. It's like you, I have this like running soundtrack of Jay-Z in the back of my mind, like, allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Kelly.
Yes.
So I'm not sure who you knew before, but these are the healthy boundaries. Yeah. And what I think for me, what was the biggest surprise, not really aha moment, but surprise for me was thinking there were people in my life who have been in my life for some time.
Yeah.
And so, of course, because this is really going to be better for me, whether that's self-care, whether that's setting boundaries in the workplace or whatever, wherever those boundaries may fall, of course, everybody's going to be in line with this. I mean, they're going to be down for this. They're going to be cheerleaders of it. And then reality hit. And the reality is a couple of realities for me. One, the reality is there is, you know, the whole reason, season, lifetime, and people are in your life for a reason, season, lifetime. Yeah. But there is an extended, or there is a purposed amount of time for people to be in your life. And when that has expired, which I'm just not good about, moving through with the I like to extend the expiration. That connection has served its purpose. Yeah. It has met its assignment. And I do feel like boundaries often happen to be that defining moment of this assignment has been fulfilled.
Yeah. Oh, but that's hard. You're right. Because there are some people that have, you know, been a part of your life for a number of years and in, you know, certain capacities that it's a stretch for you to think about life without those people being present.
Absolutely.
And it's actually like a grieving.
Yes.
That happens because you now have to learn how to move through life without having that person or that comfort that you've had before. But you know, that's a part of the maturation process is being cognizant of the fact that as I evolve and my world evolves, so will the people that are in it.
Yeah.
But that's, listen, that's, it's difficult.
It is difficult because I think you make a great point about the grieving. That's one thing that I have really learned this past year. I wish somebody had given me a heads up.
Yeah.
But I don't know that the heads up would have helped. But let me speak for myself. I often associated grieving with the physical transitioning of someone, the physical death. What I was very underdeveloped in was learning how to grieve the living.
Girl, now you're talking.
How do I grieve someone? It's almost, and I know this may not hit well with everybody, but my opinion is sometimes it can seem easier psychologically, mentally, if the person is no longer here physically.
Yeah.
But when the person is still here
down the street and around the corner, and I just cannot have you in my life in the same way, in the same capacity, because it doesn't serve me. That's hard.
And the feelings that then come up with it being hard, the guilt, am I being selfish? All of that that comes along with that grieving process, the anger, the frustration, the disbelief. Because, you know, then some people can kind of cut up.
Yeah, because some people don't, let me put it this way. They don't respect your boundary setting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of being 40 and over and coming to this point is recognizing that you have to make the decisions that are right for your growth. And you can't wait for people to respond positively to that or expect, not even wait, just expect that everybody is going to this is for me.
Yeah.
How you take it is really up to you.
Mm-hmm.
You can go healthily or not, but I'm going to continue to grow in a healthy direction. And, you know, my boundary. And I heard somebody say this, that a boundary is a gate, right? Where I'm deciding what comes in and what is out, right?
Yes.
And I can open it, I can shut it based on my needs, but I control the gate.
Yes.
You know, a boundary doesn't always have to be a wall.
Mm-hmm.
It just might mean that in these circumstances, let me give you an example. I love my mother. You guys probably hear me talk a lot about my mother. She's wonderful. I love her. But When I got married and I was approaching 40, I had to recognize that she will always be in my life. Yeah. She's my mom. I love her. But there were certain parts of our relationship that were appropriate before I was married.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
That became inappropriate post-nuptial.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, you can come in these areas, but babes, when it comes to my marriage, when it comes to how we decide to raise our children, when it, you know, certain decisions, I'm just not going to be coming and seeking counsel, nor am I going to be allowing the unsolicited advice and counsel in this particular area of my life. That's a boundary. It's a gate. It doesn't mean I don't love you. It doesn't mean we're not in relationship. You know, some people, you know, it's a hard no. Like, we just simply can't be in relationship in any capacity. But I don't think that that's the case most of the time.
Yeah.
I think it's most of the time it's redefining how we engage with folks and being okay with them not being okay with it.
Yeah. And can I add to what you said? I love the analogy of the fence and the wall, because even me in therapy, working through with my therapist, she shared that information about the wall and the boundary, because to me, I was defining a boundary as a wall.
Ah, yeah.
As if you are cut off, cut out. There was, you know, kind of like the point of no return. But like you mentioned, it is a gate. And I'm giving you the combo.
Mm-hmm.
I'm giving you the key. I'm providing access. But what I also love that my therapist said was there's two parts to that. Mm-hmm. So like in the example that you were sharing with your mom, it's like, hey, I've set the code. I've set the rules.
Yeah.
These are some topics that are open for discussion. And I love that you said allow. There are some things that I will not allow as far as conversation, but I have provided the code for the gate, but you also have to walk through.
Yeah.
And the challenge that I have had this past year in a family space is I am setting some boundaries, and I understand that I have not set boundaries before.
Yeah.
And so this is fresh and this is new.
Yeah.
And not always well received, but I am giving you the combo. And I'd love for you to come through, but I also can't make you come through.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest struggle for me.
Yeah.
Was having the gate, providing the code. Well, understanding the difference between the wall and the gate, first of all. Second of all, providing the code and this sitting back thinking, well, yeah, everybody's going to come through.
Yeah.
But some people have the code and they don't come through.
And because it's their decision, about, I think, about whether or not, just like we're setting a boundary, they want to accept it. You know, I have a lot of passwords to a lot of accounts that I just don't want to access.
Yeah.
Because I've decided that, you know, maybe it's too complicated to use. You know, I've moved on to something else.
That's good.
And so I think, you know, that we have to be okay with that. That's the hurtful part, though, because what we want to do when we set boundaries is we want to set the boundary, set the codes, you know, really outline what's allowable and what's not allowed. And then we want people to just say, okay, I can live with that. And
yeah.
I'm coming through.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be what you need me to be. And I think, you know, not everyone is capable of that.
Mm-hmm.
And our boundaries are just that, they're ours.
Yeah.
And we can't force them upon other people.
That is so true. And that was the grieving part for me.
Yeah.
The grieving part was me in my idealistic and idyllic mind thinking, everything you just said, yeah, okay, I've set the boundaries, I've given the code, and of course you're going to come through because this is just what we do.
Yeah.
We're connected. And then sitting there and realizing, oh, but they're not.
They're not.
And then that's where the grieving of the living comes in. And it's not even the grieving, the loss of the person necessarily, but the loss of the connection. And then for me, it was the loss of the memories and the loss of, well, what does that look like moving forward, you know, to the part of redefining? Then we have to redefine, or I, in my case, I had to redefine, what does this relationship look like now? What does this connection look like?
Right.
And in some instances, does the connection continue? Or is this the end of the connection?
Yeah.
But I have noticed for me, then shifting from personal to a corporate space or a business space or an entrepreneurial space, you know, you kind of get some kahunas.
You get some
muscles.
you find them.
You find them. And then you've developed this strength. It's kind of like, I liken it to whenever you are renovating a home.
Yeah.
And you say, you know what? I really would like new carpet. I've really been wanting hardwood floors. So you pull up the carpet and you put down the hardwood floors. And then the hardwood floors are so beautiful and you really enjoy those. And then you realize, see, this wallpaper with the floors doesn't work anymore.
Right.
Right? So it's like, okay, I'm going to take the wallpaper down. I'm going to put a nice, you know, muted color that's going to go well with the hardwood floors. You're like, oh, I like the hardwood floors and I am really feeling the wall color now. But that sofa.
Right.
Just isn't working anymore.
Right, right.
And I feel like that's how boundary setting is. It's like you have it in this one space. Like that's what I learned this past year in my personal space. And then it was like, okay, but if I'm not going to allow that there in my workspace.
Okay, now you're talking good.
We need to set up some healthy boundaries in the workspace. And some of that was me. Like, okay, Kelly, so you're on vacation. You've got your laptop. You got your computer. This is supposed to be a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
This ain't supposed to be a workcation.
Right.
So then it was me and my husband setting up healthy boundaries of, so the laptop, yeah, that's going to stay at the house. So I was like, okay, so like, let's negotiate, right?
Yeah.
So like, if we keep the laptop at the house, can I take like the work phone? That way, you know, if anything comes, you know, so then it gets to the point where then you continue on with the boundaries of, you don't bring any work.
Yeah.
And you're just being with, in this particular instance, your partner. But I do think as we continue that boundary discussion, then we get into the space of, you know, we were just chatting before this about Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett.
Mm-hmm.
And she had to set a very clear and healthy boundary in the workplace. Okay. Because, you know, we are Black women wherever we are.
That's it.
All day and all night.
All day. Now,
we can be highly educated, dignified,
and are,
and classy and all the things.
Yes.
But we can read you down without a four-letter word, without raising our voice. It's almost like a paper cut.
Yeah.
Like, ooh.
Did I just get cut?
I just got cut.
Ah.
So, you know, when Congresswoman Crockett in the workplace found that a boundary had been crossed, you know, about the fake eyelashes and everything. She came back with so these are the rules. Now that I understand the rules, let's have a conversation about the things.
And I think that's an important place to sort of park for a second.
Yeah.
Because I think for Black women, especially in corporate settings or professional settings, it is difficult, more difficult to set boundaries because of a few things. One, because we know that opportunities are fewer and far between for us. And so when we get those opportunities, you know, we almost become so protective of, you know, the advancement that it's like, I'm not going to rock the boat.
Yeah.
Right. I think this is shifting dramatically.
Yeah.
You know, as we move into, you know, the 2020s. You know, Black women are feeling more empowered to say, listen, no, you can't talk to me like that. You can't run your fingers through my hair.
Woo!
You can't, you can't just monopolize my time. You can't give me extra work without the corresponding pay. You know, I think we're more comfortable having those conversations, but we still have the stigma of being, you know, an aggressive, angry Black woman.
Yes.
That I think sometimes it helps us to be insecure in our ability to question what is questionable behavior by others towards us.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that we have to continue to challenge and push back on is if the place doesn't allow you to speak up and to operate from a level playing field. Is that your place? And can you get comfortable with walking away when you need? That's a boundary.
That is.
I just heard my four-year-old sing the, it's a boundary. It's a boundary.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we have to be comfortable with that. I don't, you can think I'm an angry Black woman all you want. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, your response to me in this particular situation is, was, it continues to be inappropriate and unacceptable. And I won't allow it.
Yeah.
I won't allow it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have to get comfortable doing that.
We do. And I know it can seem and feel, because I can even feel it a bit in me, that it's easier said than done.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. The times where I have typed out an email and just sat and reread it and thought, okay, so how is this going to be received on the other end? Now, the reason I'm having to even draft this email was your egregious behavior, actions, and words. But I'm having to do so much self-reflection of how this is going to come across as a Black woman.
Yep.
Down to, you know, in corporate spaces or in business spaces, back to the angry Black woman trope and aggressive Black woman trope, how much we have to smile. If we think about Vice President Kamala Harris and how much we often see her smiling, I'm sure that it is a very conscious and intentional decision on her point, on her part, to smile.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter how soft, how low our voice is, the volume with which, there is a perception that we tend to be bucking up against. But I do agree with you that as women, particularly as Black women, I think we're definitely shifting to a space of, regardless, this is a boundary and it has been crossed.
And it's been crossed.
My therapist always says, a boundary without a consequence is a preference.
Wow.
And I thought that was such a profound statement.
Yeah.
Because when she and I first started working together, we initially started working together for that very thing, helping me understand how to set healthy boundaries. And I would, she, you know, we would do role playing and she would say, okay, so now in this scenario, tell me, you know, what your thoughts are on how you're going to respond and what it is that you're going to say. And I would say, oh, okay, yeah, you know, because I, you know, I'm a student, right? So I have my little notebook, my little bullet points. Okay, so if when they say this, I'm starting off the conversation, or because they said this, I'm starting the conversation with bullet point 1, 2, 3. And she said, oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. So those are preferences. Mm. You have just, she said, think of it this way. When you go to someone's home and they say, you are unable to smoke in my home, if there's no consequence for them smoking in your home, it's just a preference. Right. I would just prefer that you don't smoke in my home, as opposed to, you cannot smoke in my home. And if you do.
And if you, and if.
And if.
Yeah.
If I heard her say, and if one more doggone time. But it was, but it makes sense because it, without that, it is just something that sounds good. And that's what really helped me with the boundaries, even in like a workplace. Mm-hmm. If you cross this boundary, or should you cross this boundary? And if you do, here are the consequences. And I think in our personal lives, in our work life, you know, and I know we're making more strides in personal and work life, even having already set what those and ifs are for clarity, because, you know, people's memories get short and all of a sudden they don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So allow me to, you know, as I'm reintroducing myself, as we talked about earlier, allow me to reiterate what the consequences are for these actions.
No, that's so good. And I think when you come to 40, that's a level of clarity I think you start to have, and you start to create space to make, right? Make clear. What do I like? What don't I like?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what offends me? What is unacceptable and existing in my world? And then again, how do I consequent the lack of respect for the boundaries that I'm setting. I can remember back to my 20s. There, I had a lot of preferences, if you know, by your definition.
Yeah.
And people were always choosing their preferences over mine. Mm-hmm. And you just stay with those relationships because of all the things we talked about before. Because, you know, do I want to upset the apple cart? Do I want to risk losing this relationship? And then choosing relationships based on, you know, that almost aggressive, if not obsessive, need to be accepted.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
I do.
I think at 40, what I can say is I care so much less about assimilating, being accepted, even being celebrated.
Yeah.
And I started my 40th year in that way. It was during COVID. And you know, everything was shut down. And I knew that this was a big, you know, a milestone birthday, of course. And you're turning 40. But I wanted to start 40 defining for me what made me happy.
Okay.
So I planned my own little party, booked a room at the Mandarin Oriental in Miami, and drove my little self from Broward to Miami, Florida. And I spent 4 days at the Mandarin by myself.
Did you? I love that.
For my 40th birthday. And now looking back, I can't say then I was sober enough in how I was thinking about things to say, you're doing this because this will define 40 on. I just knew something had to change.
That's good.
At 40. That I had to do something different at 40 than I had been doing at 39 backwards. Like, I mean, I just had to create the joy that I wanted. And I could not wait around for anyone and make that their responsibility to do for me.
I love that. Can I ask you a quick follow-up question?
Sure.
Was there something in particular, or do you think it was just a knowing and a sense?
It was a mix. You know, for me, birthdays are extremely important. And, you know, I don't know if you have this issue, but for me, there are certain holidays and certain things that you naturally kind of tend towards a little like sadness, like or like a grief around it. And I can't even articulate why.
Yeah.
For my sister, it's like Mother's Day for whatever reason. Like every Mother's Day is kind of like, oh, I'm just kind of down. I mean, like, what happened to you? Like, nothing that I can remember. I just, you know, I feel some kind of way.
Okay.
For me, it's my birthday. And I think for me, it stems back to being younger and having a harder childhood where it wasn't always possible to celebrate me on my birthday. And so I really, really prioritize my birthday. And, you know, family may mean their best, but, you know, I just didn't want people to fumble my 40th.
I got it.
You understand?
I got it.
So it was kind of situational in that it's like, I'm not going to take the risk. And I can't say this is the health. I'm not at all saying this is sort of the healthiest way to think about it. But in my mind, then I said, I'm not going to take the risk of me not getting the celebration that I want.
Okay.
And it was definitely a control thing. Like, I want to control how this is going to work for me. Also, I think the cherry on top was this new freedom that I felt coming on as I neared 40 to do that. Because before you know, I just sucked it up. You know, what you give me, I'm taking. I think that's the conversation, is that at 40, it's like, no, I'm not taking what you're handing out if it doesn't work for me.
Absolutely.
And I'm more than okay to make it happen for myself if I need to. You know, shade, no tea to my family. I'm sure they would have done a decent job. But what I had was what I wanted.
Yeah. And I ask that question because I do feel like we all at different moments have, all at different points have those moments.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can be triggered by something specifically. Sometimes perhaps it's a culmination of smaller things that
yeah.
we can readily define. But I do think there's a third category, which is what I hear from you, in that it was a moment in which I had this point of clarity. And what I was clear on, even if I didn't have all of the pieces right after that, what I was clear on was that this is what I wanted. I was going to ensure that that was my experience. And I love that you felt comfortable enough to say, I'm setting the tone for this time in my life. And yeah, no tea, no shade to the family. And I think sometimes that becomes the reason why we don't do things also. It's like, well, I don't want this person to feel offended, or, you know, I don't want them to feel some kind of way. And it's like, well, what about you?
Okay, Black woman, let's have that conversation.
Let's have it.
Because that is one, I think, of the guiding principles of a Black woman's life is take care of everybody else first.
Yes.
And it's really got to stop.
It does.
It's really got to stop. Because, you know, at this point, we are sacrificing life, limb, happiness, you know, fulfillment, because we live our whole lives. Because I do recognize that we are in the minority, I believe. While I think there's a shift, still in the minority of Black women who are really facing the need to set boundaries and doing the work to learn how to do that appropriately. I still think, by and large, Black women are living to cater to everyone else around us to the detriment of ourselves.
I agree.
And it's killing us.
It is killing us. And what I do love about where I, and I agree with you, I think that we definitely fall well behind our counterparts. I think that we're making shifts, but I'd love to see us make even more strides and shifts, because you're absolutely right. We tend to just put our lives on hold for this particular 20-year period of time when we're good and fresh, when we're good and juicy in more ways than one. This is No Filter, fam, right?
It's No Filter.
Yeah.